This episode is sponsored by VTech.
Today's episode of Heads in the Cloud, Graham and I are going to talk to Joel Wexel, the Managing Director at the Skills Connection.
We've met Joel before, so...
He's a good dude. We're going to talk about Gartner and analysts and...
Looking forward to it.
Lin-Manuel Miranda and who knows what
Only
else.
Children and stuff like that.
So stick around.
Heads in the Cloud. With your hosts, David Portnowitz and Graham Potter.
Hello. How are you, buddy?
I'm good. How are you?
Great. I'm excited for today's show. How about you?
Yeah, I am as well. I'm going to learn a lot more about...
Everything.
About anything. Everything. You know, every session we do, you learn something, which is awesome. Either about you or me or the person we're supposed to be interviewing. Or their potential pets.
I guess this is true. On today's episode, Graham and I are going to be joined with Joel Wexel, who is the Managing Director at the Skills Connection. Joel's a fascinating individual, been in the space for over 40 years, ex-Gartner, ex-Xerox, I don't know. Do I have any more X's?
No, ex-everything.
Maybe he's an ex-man. Maybe he's like Professor X or something.
Got lots of good stories, I'm sure.
No, you know what? He's a fascinating guy because he has so much insight into the world of analysts and how they think and how they work and what they do and how what makes a good analyst, what makes a bad analyst, how to interact with an analyst. I mean, he's really fascinating from that standpoint.
Yeah, that's actually useful for anybody listening to this podcast is perhaps thinking about that type of thing and some good insight. Because I think there are a lot of folks out there in the marketplace. We've dealt with many.
Oh yeah, we talked to Gartner and Frost and Sullivan and Forrester and IHS and Markets and Markets. We're talking to them all the time. So it's always good to understand the best way to communicate with analysts, how they think, what they're up to, how to present to them, what to show them. I mean, you really want to understand what makes them tick, and I think that's what makes Joel and his company is so successful is they really understand that. I mean, they're a bunch of ex-Gartner and other analysts, other firms. He's a fascinating dude. He's a funny man. He's
different.
Yeah,
that's good.
He's a New Yorker. What can you say?
I think that's great.
He's a New Yorker, born and raised.
Born and raised.
He loves him some musicals.
I think you could be an analyst, David.
Maybe in sports. That's about it.
Yeah.
Sports, food.
Yeah. An analyst of food.
Food
How
analyst.
About that? Yeah, I could do that.
Yeah, just eat and talk about it.
Yeah, I could do that.
I'm in.
Yeah, I'm in.
We'll start a company.
Well, I live next door
to the Food Connection.
I live next door to a chef, and I'm still trying to work an angle in there to get to sample some of his...
Chef who?
His stuff. He's a local chef, celebrity chef, so...
What's his name?
His name is Chris Covelli.
Never heard of him.
Yeah, he actually teaches in culinary school in Italy, so...
Yeah.
In Tuscany.
Maybe he should host a dinner for us. Heads in the Cloud dinner.
No, here's the thing. He's opening a restaurant in Sarasota next month.
Should we talk about that, is that a secret?
International cuisine, four floors. I think he's going to cycle the cuisine that is available. I think the first two floors are restaurant. Third floor is like a banqueting floor.
Yeah.
Fourth floor is like a rooftop restaurant.
When is that going to open?
It's in the old Times building in Sarasota. Historic building, so you know the place.
The old Times Square? I mean, I don't know what the heck you guys are talking about.
Talking about producers,
right off of 41 Cross Street from the Ritz-Carlton.
Okay.
Oh, okay. All right. All right. We'll have to look forward to that. So maybe we'll get an invite.
I think. Yeah.
We should do a Heads in the Cloud episode there.
I'll talk to him.
And we get a free dinner.
I'll talk to him and see if I can set that one up.
I think my goal in this world is just to get as much free stuff as possible.
Yeah.
I'm not shameless.
I know.
No.
I know. You're not backward in coming forward. Are
no. So. I don't know what you just said.
No, but look at my face.
But anyways, how did we get? I don't even understand how we got on this topic.
We
were talking about starting a food analyst company. Anyways, let's go to Joel. What do you think?
Yeah, I think
it's quite a good conversation. He's a great dude. Stay tuned, and you'll learn a ton.
Is he there yet?
He's there.
He's there.
Call him up.
Call him up,
Joel.
Mm-hmm.
Joining Graham and I today on our Heads in the Cloud podcast is Joel Wexell, the managing director of the Skills Connection. Joel is one of my good friends. Thanks for joining us today, Joel.
Yeah, thank you, Joel.
Oh, it is absolutely my pleasure.
So Joel is an ex-Gartner dude. And why don't you tell us a little bit about your background, your history, sort of how you got started at Gartner and what you're doing now?
That's really funny. I think I'm going to try to put it in some context as well, because I am not young anymore. I started in the computer business right out of college, which is pretty amazing. And I started as a programmer and then was selling mainframes, which is kind of cool. Sold mainframes by making telephone calls and cold calling. Went from there to Xerox, when Xerox actually was a national treasure and the business counted. Palo Alto Research Center, those kinds of things. We were in the computer business, and then did a startup, and then went to Gartner. So it's really been pretty amazing. The journey is interesting because you forget things that you know that some people just don't know anything about. I was working with a client. I'm a board advisor for one of our clients, and I was meeting with their young sales organization, and I was talking about, you know, how I started, and I mentioned the word mainframe. And the head of sales, the chief revenue officer, looked at the group of folks that we had just hired from college and said, does anybody know what a mainframe was? And two of them raised their hands, and I was kind of in shock. So I've been in business a really long time, but this is the only business I've ever been in, and I've been really lucky. I started at Gartner as the Xerox watcher because I had left Xerox doing some really cool and significant things. And after a bunch of time as a reasonably good analyst, but certainly not one of the best ones, ended up running all of research for software worldwide and then associate development, and then left to start the Skills Connection. And, you know, we really are a bunch of former Gartner folks. All of the folks in the group started as analysts. All of the folks in the group are curious and childlike and really, really smart. And so it's been a lot of fun.
So what drove you to start the Skills Connection, Joel?
A couple of things. One of them was I was done with Gartner after 19 years.
Right.
Although, in fairness, I think they were probably done with me. So, I'm not sure. You know, for me to last 19 years in one place is pretty cool. I'm not sure I wear that well. But I was lucky, and I really had a good time. If you're not familiar with Gartner, and if you're an analyst, it's an opportunity to really do extraordinary things and never have to grow up. Because you get to think and you get to write and you get to present to 1,000 people. And, you know, there's really, if you're good at it, if it's something that you really want to do, it's the coolest thing you can do. And Simon Levin, my co-managing director and co-founder, was also looking to do something interesting. And we always wanted to be in the communications and training business. And we thought that would be a good business, which is how we ended up calling the company the Skills Connection. And realize that most companies, including the Gartner and the Foresters of the world, don't spend a lot of money on associate development. So while we have world-class workshops that we deliver around a number of topics, we quickly tumbled to the fact that what we're good at is helping technology companies tell their story, create an outside-in story, and then more effectively working with companies like Gartner and Forrester, because the opinion of Gartner and Forrester count a lot and really impact vendors' businesses. So we started together, just the two of us, and now there are about 17 of us in the business. And, you know, everybody that's in the business is here because we want to be. Most folks are in second and third careers. And we're having fun. We're doing stuff we really enjoy. And B, we believe that we're making an impact, and I think the folks in the group at this point in their lives really want to make an impact. So it's been very good for a lot of reasons, and frankly, good beyond my wildest dreams.
Now, as a resident Gartner historian, can you tell us a little bit about the start of Gartner, where sort of who started it? How did it get its start? You know,
how
sort
many
of
employees when you. When
yeah, I mean,
you
like, what was the what was the motif the back in the day?
Yeah, you know, back when Moses came down from the mountain.
Well, I wasn't going to say that, Joel, but you know.
I remember the day. It was. There were blue skies. It was really wonderful, flowing garments. But the business was started by this amazing guy, Gideon Gartner, and Gideon was the IBM watcher on Wall Street. And research on Wall Street at the time is primarily around buying, selling, and holding securities. And Gideon applied that to this business. So he created a business that really told clients, primarily user clients, what to do, who to do it with, how to do it, how to manage it, how much to pay, those kinds of things. And because Gideon was able to attract users, then the vendors came along. So the business had historically been a business for users to get advice and counsel around initiatives, and quickly became a very large business with a significant significant business in the vendor community, as well as a huge business in conference and events. Because the Gartner analysts are really great on their feet, so they've got great content, and they're funny and compelling, and so they're able to command a large room and keep people interested and teach things. So the Gartner business has become pretty big. It's the influence that Gartner has, frankly, is outsized based on a lot of things. I mean, when people. Excuse me, when people hear an analyst speak, you know, they think that what they're providing is a fact. And the reality is that when analysts speak, they're providing opinion. And in a lot of cases, the opinions are great. In some cases, they're not great. And when they're not great, the hope is that people that are listening will think for themselves. And what happens, unfortunately, is sometimes people that are making decisions don't think for themselves. And the impact these analysts have is significant in some cases beyond what it should be. A lot of good analysts, but the impact that companies like Gartner have on companies like Star2Star is incredibly significant.
So what are some of the things that you think of that are great attributes for analysts? What makes some stand out better than others in your view?
It's interesting. I was thinking about that before this call, we have clients all over the world, and I was filling out a document for India, and we had to testify that we don't have child labor. And I was going to give a funny answer that said we have analysts, but a lot of them act like children, and I think that's really important. You have to be curious. If you're not curious, you can't be an analyst. You have to be able to know things, and then you have to be able to integrate things. So you may pick up a piece of information someplace and not apply it for a while. Keep it in the back of your head. So it isn't just that you know a market, because you can get subject matter experts that are great at providing information, but after working with them for 6 months, they've told you everything they know. You know, that's not a great analyst. Great analysts are able to create new things. And I'll give you some examples. But great analysts are really the intersection of theater and IT. You know, think about Lin-Manuel Miranda in terms of the requirement of being able to know stuff, right? Clearly understands music and writing, needs to be able to create, and then needs to be able to stand up and deliver it and present it. And the reality is that analysts, good analysts, need to have those kinds of qualities and be able to do those kinds of things. I'll give you two examples. Both of them are about me. Certainly, as I said when I started. Okay, so I'm an only child.
No, I would never.
So the stories are around me, but they're true. I remember we were doing scenario planning. And I had three groups at the time, a sales group, a marketing group, and a customer service group. And the question I asked the group back in the mid-90s is what happens when these disciplines intersect. And we discovered CRM. Right? We didn't give it the right name. We called it technology-enabled relationship management. But we started doing research on CRM well before others. We created this thing. I was doing a workshop in Israel, and somebody asked me how could they possibly do a presentation on architecture and show that their company's architecture provided advantage. And I remember a year before reading an article about the New York City city plan and why the advantage of the architecture of the square rectangular streets in New York City, and how the city was able to electrify and provide water because of the city plan. So we're talking about architecture. You really need to be able to do that kind of integration to be able to tell the stories that are meaningful and tease out things for companies. So analysts need to be curious. They need to be able to integrate things. They need to be able to write. They need to be able to socialize. They need to be able to speak and communicate. And it's a very hard set of things that that you need to have. I know you had David Mario Smith doing a podcast. I know David well. And you can see how David and how he thinks, and you can see all of these pieces coming together. And I also know that you will either do the Jonathan Yarmus podcast before or after this one, but you can begin to see that those same qualities in Jonathan as you saw in David.
And so is there certain training that these analysts go through? I mean, is Gartner training them a certain way, or are they coming in and have those skills and Gartner sort of just helps accentuate those? I mean, how does that process work?
Yeah, well, as I said a little while ago, the dirty little secret is that companies don't spend as much in training as they should. I also said that you can hire a subject matter expert, and in 6 months, the expert will tell you everything they know and really not be an analyst. So companies train. There's a lot of peer training, right, and support from peers. Managers should be working with analysts. But I think at the end of the day, it's either something you're good at or you're not. And you know it very quickly if you're not. If you're not good at it, it's painful. And if you're good at it, it's the best job in the whole world.
Yeah, it's got to be a very social role. So what are some of the most favorite things that you enjoy about that world, Joel? And then the flip side of that, what are some of the things that you like least about it, just from an interest point of view for our listeners?
Well, I haven't been an analyst for a long time, and I think the business has, I know the business has changed. It was a lot more fun back in the day, and I'm not saying that because I'm old and crotchety, but that's not the reason I'm saying it. Running the business, the metrics of running the business, I think drive the analysts crazy. The productivity goals that the analysts need to hit drive them crazy. And it takes the fun out of being an analyst. There are different parts of running a business. And in the analyst world, there are people that are wonderful and creative, and there are others that are gatekeepers. And I think the gatekeepers take the fun out of the business. Gatekeepers should ensure that the analysts are focused on the right things, that the quality of the research is as good as it can possibly be, and that when an analyst is in front of a client, what they deliver is absolutely first-rate and terrific. I think it's hard to do that and count how many analyst inquiries an analyst had, for the last 6 months.
Sure.
Because those two things are very different. I would always opt for the creative and fun side of the business. And frankly, we try to do this in our business. We do very little oversight in terms of how people spend their time. The only thing we really care about is are we doing great things for the clients. We talk to the folks in the group. We don't have them do reports. We support them. We know what's going on. When they have problems, they let us know. And the only goal we all have is to do great work. I guess we can do that because we're not public and we're obviously smaller. But at the end of the day, it's who we are.
So if Gartner or Frost & Sullivan or Forrester, if they called you up tomorrow, Joel, and said, Joel, we want you to come run the research group for our team. Would you do it?
No, I already screwed up my research group. When I was running 120 analysts at Gartner, I don't want to have to screw it up again. I'm just having too much fun. We get to do those things, but we get to do it from the other side of the desk.
Sure. Right?
So we have too much fun. We have too much freedom. And the only thing we're concerned about on our side is doing great stuff. If they wanted us to come in to help them do that, then we'd love to do that. Love working with analysts. We think analysts are, you know, more fun than a barrel of monkeys. They're smart. They're really great. We have great conversations with analysts that primarily, you know, focus around religion and politics, all the things that nobody wants to chat about publicly. Analysts are happy to talk about. So they're really great and wonderful people. So we'd be happy to come in and fix things, but I'm not sure. In fact, I know that going back and trying to fix a big organization is something I would never want to do.
How do you?
Not anymore.
How do you view? I mean, I feel like nowadays there's more analysts out there than there ever been. I mean, there's all these firms that you touch base with. I mean, how does a company wade through all that and decide who are the right ones to talk to and who aren't? I mean,
maybe in their specific space.
Yeah, but I mean, I feel like, you know, there's just so many now that you sort of get pinged by, you know, in an organization. You sort of get asked to be part of a research study or whatever. I mean, is it worth it to do all of them? Should you be more selective? I mean, what do you think?
Well, you can't do all of them because you don't have all the time in the world. You need to pick the ones that have the most impact on your business, and even specialist organizations, you may discover if you're in the security business, for example, or in the BI business, there are small boutiques that have established brands and have impact on the business. You really need to take a look at where the impact is, because at the end of the day, you have to generate revenue and profits. So the easy one to pick is Gartner. We just completed a survey for 2018, and we'll be doing an analysis of the results and doing it on a webinar. But for the most part, you know, the companies that folks do business with are Gartner first, Forrester second, and then you start looking at companies like 451 and IDC. And then beyond that, you know, the Forrester and Sullivan's and others are further down on the list. So primarily for IT, it's Gartner.
Yeah.
And then secondarily, it's Forrester. But, you know, those are the places that you have to spend your time.
It's interesting. I mean, I just, you know, being on that side of it, you know, on the vendor side, it's a fun game. You sort of have to, you know, build the relationship, make sure you're, you know, doing enough touch points. You know, it's almost like a little dance, you know.
I think it's a very necessary dance.
Yeah, but I also feel like on the analyst side, I mean, I feel like there's just so much you have to weigh. You know, like the information you're getting, I just feel like it's a challenge, you know.
Well, I think that's part of it, David. But I think, you know, if you think about how you and I work, the social and the relationship aspect is a piece of it. But the most important piece of it is that when you get in front of an analyst, that the content's great.
Yeah.
So the real work goes back to the creative work, is how do you present your company through your lens in the best possible way, right? So the analyst has a point of view, you have a point of view, and if you both come to the party with opinions, the analyst's opinion is going to be the one that counts all of the time. So the question is, how do you present your business in a way that's differentiated? How do you present your story in a way that's outside in and essential? And then what evidence do you present to ensure that you're proving your essential story? So I think it's more than a game. It's more than a dance. I think there are social aspects to it. You don't want to upset the analyst. But at the end of the day, you want to present your story in a way that is highly differentiated, concrete, credible, and memorable. And then you need to go back and and do some really hard work. So, and that's, and frankly, that's the stuff that we do. You know, we do the hard work with you.
Yeah.
We force those things. You know, we're the ones that look at what you're doing and scream BS if it doesn't ring true, or BS if it's not differentiated, or BS if we don't have evidence of customer deployments and customer satisfaction and new capabilities, and then prove all of these things. So it's the development of an essential story with the concrete and credible proof that makes what you're saying in the story real. And that's the best way to deal with analysts. It's the best way to deal with each other. It's the best way to deal with prospects and customers. So the work that you do with an analyst is really a slice of a lot of things that you should be doing with everybody. You know, we believe a couple of things. I was talking to a prospect today, and he said, how much time, you know, will this take? And I said, I swear to you, we're impossible to work with. You know, we're going to make your life, and we're going to make your life in a living hell, because we're very demanding. I said, but this is like training for a sport. Your company needs to know what your pipeline is at a given moment. You need to know how big it is. You need to know what direction it's going. You need to know how fast it's accelerating. There's a set of things that you need to know to run a good business. And so I think a lot of the things that we do, while they're focused on working with analysts, are really focused on running a good business. And we find that the companies that we work with that have that information on their fingertips are the ones that are the most successful.
So here's my challenge with that, is that you can do all those things. You can present your story. You can go to the analyst and say, this is what we're doing. This is the evidence. And they still can come back with an opinion that you may not find as flattering as you would hope. So how do you...
So you're always going to get that.
But how do you convince them otherwise if you've done all those things? I mean, like, you know, I see it all the time, not just in our space, but in other spaces as well. I see, you know, people arguing with the analyst results, but at the end of the day, they have the opinion. But it's one of those things that I find frustrating about the space as well.
I think there's a couple of things that come out of that. One is that the question is what the analyst saying an opinion or a fact? And the answer is, it's an opinion masquerading as a fact. And that part of it is really frustrating. The other piece is that all analysts aren't created equal. Some are much better than others, right? Some listen better. Some are more open to change. Some have quality of analysis that's better than others. You know, we created a 2x2 matrix because we're analysts. And the bottom left quadrant is defined as, if I drink the poison, will the analyst die? Right? That's what vendors feel like when they're dealing with an analyst that may be unfair, could be biased, may not have the skills. And so you're dealing with people. You may not like an outcome for a single assessment. You need to spend time working with the analyst over time, and hopefully have the analyst begin to understand your story, your business, and the unique differentiation. If it turns out that the result of the work is biased, or they're coming to conclusions based on not looking at all of the facts, then you have companies that allow escalation, and hopefully, you know, companies like Gartner will have managers look at the research and the process, and if that doesn't work, escalate to an ombudsman. But at the end of the day, in some cases, you'll get what you want. And in some cases, you're not going to be satisfied. And I think that's just the nature of the beast.
Yeah, I hear you. It's just one of those things where it's like, I feel like if you challenge it and then you say, oh, you know, let's talk to your manager.
And if you do,
and then the next thing you know, the analyst is mad at you, like, you know, because, you know what, you don't believe my opinion is right. You got to go to my boss. I feel like it puts you in a bad light. But anyways, that's probably a longer conversation.
But I think if you make it fact-based and you take the emotion out of it, then you can have decent conversations.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, that's the key. You have to take the friction out of the relationship, have to take the emotion out, and deal with your business and your story on a fact base.
That's cool. Well, so Joel, yeah, we've kind of taken up, we're just mindful of the amount of time we've taken up of yours, which has been very gracious, you joining us to today. But before we close out, I know David's got one last question that he always likes to ask our folks that we interview. David?
Yeah, Joel, why don't you tell us, you have any pets at home? I have a feeling you have a good answer for this, though. Let's see.
I didn't have any pets growing up in Brooklyn, although my mother once put my parakeet out on the fire escape in the winter, and the poor bird froze. But
that's the same thing that happened to my hamster.
I was going to say, did it have a jacket on?
I think it's a Brooklyn thing. But we have two children and six grandchildren, and my daughter's family has a golden, and she always wanted a dog, and we love the golden. I get the golden in the summer. When she and the kids were at camp, so it's the grand puppy. And I knew I was in trouble, and we were very close, and she was probably in her mid-20s at the time, and we were walking and holding hands, and she was still holding my hand, talking to small children who were walking their dog with their parents, and she looks down at the kid, still holding my hand, going, "You're really lucky. My parents never let me have a dog." Yeah, so...
Awesome.
Well, I'm glad you get a dog at some point. A dog and golf is all Joel needs, right?
Yeah, it's just perfect. No complaints.
No complaints.
I even enjoy working with you, David.
You know what, Joel? You know, maybe you should spend some more time with David than I won't have to. So
I think we have a date next month.
Well, awesome. Joel and Joel's looking got forward. We might be because he's got a little something going on in Florida too, so he wants us to come over and play a little golf.
Okay, cool.
I know you're not a golfer,
Graham. I'm not a golfer.
Maybe Joel and I will hit some balls.
You're so lucky, Graham.
Yeah, I'll stay out of it. I boat and fish, so yeah. We'll stay away from the golf.
All right, Joel. Well, thanks for joining us today. We really appreciate you giving us the time, and we'll definitely have you back on, and we'll talk to you soon, buddy.
And we'll see you soon. Thank you very much.
I'm an only child, so I really appreciate the attention. Thank you.
You got it.
All right, buddy. Take talk care. To you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
This episode is sponsored by VTech. When you choose Star2Star and VTech for your communication needs, you get more than just a phone system. You're building a relationship with two telecommunications market leaders. No matter what your communication needs, VTech offers a comprehensive and diverse portfolio of desktop, mobility, and conference devices that scale from small offices to enterprise-level corporations. Peace of mind is important to you, and that's why VTech supports your business and Star2Star with North America-based support professionals that truly understand your market to give you the support you need. To learn more about partnering with Star2Star and VTech, visit star2star.com and vtechphones.com.
Well, that was fun.
Yeah, it was interesting.
Yeah. You said it was going to be interesting.
Gosh.
Got a lot of good insight there into what makes an analyst tick.
Do you think that Joel was an only child? Because I wasn't sure at the end of the conversation.
Not too sure about that. Well, perhaps can we call him? Can you
call
him
back? Call him back. Send him a follow-up email. Yeah.
But no, he's like the innermost workings of an analyst. What makes an analyst tick? So yeah, that's pretty cool. So
his knowledge about the history of Gartner is. I mean, we honestly could have done a whole podcast on just the history of Gartner. I mean, he has got so many stories and so many little like knowledge bubbles of information about Gartner and where how it started in the early days. And man, it must have been a fun company to work for. It sounds like it.
He's working with a collection of guys and girls that are already spent their time there as well. It's like a Gartner alumni. So, yeah, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
So,
I didn't know anything. I didn't know about Gideon Gartner.
No, I didn't know that at all.
So it's cool. Never. Cool to
new
learn.
Story to me.
So. But anyways, that was a great interview. And thanks for sticking around and listening.
Yeah.
And we'll catch you next time for Heads in the Cloud. I'm David Portnowitz.
I'm Graham Potter. And this is
Heads in the Cloud.
Keep it fresh.